Pseudopod, episode 102, August 8th, 2008. This week's story, Dear Killer, by Vinny Hansen. This week's episode of Pseudopod is brought to you by Audible. With tens of thousands of audiobooks and their inventory growing all the time, go to audiblepodcast.com/pseudopod and claim your free audiobook. Welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair Stewart, and this week's story comes to us from Vinny Hansen. Vinny has a raft of short story credits, four mystery novels in her Carol Sabala series, and is a regular contributor to Mystery Reader's Journal and others as a columnist and journalist. Remember, concentrate on what cannot lie, the evidence, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Dear Killer, by Vinny Hansen. The idea possessed Victoria. It had shot out a dark arm and seized her like a mugger. Victoria peered about the dim one-car garage and squatted to look under the counter along the wall. Pushed behind the containers of old paint, the new bag of concrete stared ominously back at her. Ben had hidden it like one would an Easter egg from a child. Did he think she was such a dolt she wouldn't notice? She came out here regularly to do laundry. Ben had not said anything about a project requiring concrete. Neither had his hunting buddy, Jack. In the 10 years Victoria had been married to Ben, he and Jack had always worked on projects together. But there had been nary a word about fixing a fence post or repairing the walk. She dragged the bag from its hiding spot. Almost 40, she was proud of how strong and lithe her body was, even if Ben's eyes constantly swiveled toward cleavage. She forced herself to read the directions on the bag. She glanced around the garage for a water container and decided she would have to use something from the house. The thermos, maybe, or the plastic pitcher, but she didn't want to return to the kitchen any sooner than necessary. Victoria rose and paced to the shelves. She wrenched her brown ponytail tight. The bag of concrete had been the culmination, the fruition, the blossom. It had not been the seed of the idea. She rummaged behind the gardening tools, rolls of wire, and the old tarps, to the new tarps. Why did Ben need new tarps? He had not said anything about his old tarps being tattered or embarrassingly splotched with paint or too small to be adequate, so why buy new tarps? Why hide them? She pulled out the blue tarps, tore off the packaging, and released the noxious odor of plastic. Tears sprouting from green eyes, she gnawed at her thumb cuticle. Maybe the idea that Ben meant to kill her had been planted by the whole sordid drama of a local man named McIlravy who had killed his wife and dumped her body in the ocean. McIlravy's mistake had been not weighing down the body properly. If his wife's body had never washed ashore, he would have remained a free man. Fortunately, she herself was smarter than McIlravy, who must have tied the concrete around his wife's limbs. The waterlogged skin would have slid off like a slippery glove, taking the rope with it, or maybe the fish had nibbled enough flesh so the ties had become loose. Victoria pulled the tie-downs from the shelf. No, McIlravy should have strung the rope through her bones, in and out of the mandible, for example, or between the ulna and radius. Satisfaction at knowing these names washed through her. She had switched from teaching high school English to elementary because she had wanted more variety of curricula. She loved science. She had also wrongly thought elementary would be easier. She pressed the button to open the garage door, carefully maneuvered the light blue Subaru into the dim interior, and closed the door. She hefted the bag of concrete onto the floor of the back seat and then threw in a 5-gallon bucket and the handle of the squeegee for a stir stick. Carrying the tarps under her arm, she walked doggedly across the deck and into the house, feeling the constriction, the inability to draw the air to the bottom of her lungs. She sat at the kitchen table and, feeling numb, tried to think. McIlravy had undermined the confidence of every wife. How would you know if your good-looking, charming husband were a psychopathic killer? What were the signs? She had accepted that Ben's first wife had died tragically in a hunting accident, but what did she really know? According to Ben, they had been hunting wild boar, and another party mistook their noise in the brush. Victoria had murmured in sympathy, as a part of her marveled that he remained a hunter. She had never read the investigative report, never pressed him for details. Maybe Ben had grown tired of his wife. Maybe his wife had wanted a baby. Victoria crossed the room and put on the tea kettle, even though she did not feel like tea. She drummed her fingers on the counter and waited for the water to boil, staring at the white kettle, keeping her eyes averted. McIlravy had been having an affair. It wasn't so much that Victoria had evidence of an affair, as that she had always expected that Ben would have one. Handsome and youthful for 42, he attracted sharp glances. He had a strong libido, and frankly, after her day at school, she felt too exhausted to satisfy him. The students were like magpies, chirping at her with their bright objects, scavenging on her energy, pecking her clean to the bone. But then, Victoria had followed Ben that one night. He had driven to Jack's house, but he hadn't gone in. Instead, Raquel's red Accord had backed out of the garage, and Ben had followed it. She had ducked down, and then she had driven home, feeling heartsick and vigilant. Afterwards, Ben had started secretly buying the stuff, the concrete and the tarps. What was a woman to think? She clicked the lid on the teapot's spout. When would the gathering steam cause the damn thing to shrill? She glanced at the body on the tiled floor. The cast iron skillet had been an effective weapon. No messy arterial spraying, no gunshot to alert the neighbors and to plant residue on her hands. The sound of crunching bone, the literal dent in his head, had been surprises. She looked away, thankful the dead people did not bleed. The already bleached and washed frying pan sat ponderously on the counter. She had wanted to get rid of the skillet. It was heavy and left a ring of grease everywhere, but he liked it for when his hunting trips combined with camping. He had been surprised to see it out. "Are you using that for dinner?" he'd said. She had shaken her head and lifted it. "Did Jack tell you something?" Those had been his last words. The kettle shrilled, and shaking water sloshed into her mug. In a couple of hours, she would have to start making worried phone calls. Raquel, wife of his best friend, how cliched. Raquel had wagered on the shortest time for Ben and Victoria's marriage to last. Petite, blonde, flirty, and horrible Raquel. She had the leisure to wear white clothing, and she walked around in a cloud of perfume. She even had the name of a sex pot. Victoria stepped over the body, threw the tea bag in the corner garbage can, and burned her mouth with the steaming mint brew. So, maybe the seed of the idea began way back then, 10 years ago, when she and Ben got married, even though she hadn't heard about the betting pool until recently. Victoria had tamped down her pride and had gone trolling for gossip about Raquel, and more obliquely, about Raquel and Ben. Sue had coughed up the information about the betting pool, supposedly because she was Victoria's friend, but Sue's relish of the details only confirmed Victoria's opinion that Sue could not keep her mouth shut and had no tact, an unfortunate combination. She glanced at the microwave's clock. She had work to do. She set her mug of tea on the butcher block table. She felt bad for Jack, too. She liked him, even if he was Ben's partner for hunting. According to Sue, Jack had bet on the marriage to last, shrugging and saying, "Opposites attract." Victoria liked books. Ben watched television. Victoria learned by doing. Ben read the directions. Victoria was a vegetarian. Ben not only enjoyed his rare meat, but relished tracking it down. You couldn't get more opposite than that. Jack had apparently said some other stuff about her maybe being a she-dog under the sheets, but at least he had been rooting for them. Victoria busied herself with unfurling a tarp, rolling the dead weight onto the malodorous blue, and wrapping the body like a giant burrito. She wiped the sweat from her forehead. She would bleach the floor later. Wearing a scarf and sunglasses, she'd already driven his pickup to the parking lot of the sporting goods store and bussed home. She tugged the heavy tarp package across the tile and across the wooden floor of the dining room to the sliding glass door. Outside, it was already dusk. Panting, she angled the tarp down to the deck. The phone shrilled into the silence. Should she answer it or not? Which would later fit best with her story? The answering machine picked up. "Hey, Jack here. Listen, Ben, I can't meet you tonight. Raquel had to use her car. Maybe you could swing by and get me. I hope I haven't already missed you, buddy. Shit, if I did..." Victoria yanked the portable phone from its kitchen cradle. "Hello, Jack." "Hi, Victoria. I hope I didn't disturb you." "Nah, just working in the yard." "You sound out of breath. Is something wrong with your truck, Jack?" He chuckled. Jack was a red-haired hunter who had let his middle-aged body go to paunch, but he had an easy laugh, and he never tried to call her Vicky. "Oh, a few weeks ago, I got this brilliant idea I could rebuild the engine. I am slowly realizing that a good mechanic is worth every penny." "How have you been getting around?" Raquel's car, when she will let it out of her sight. Victoria felt nauseously pregnant with a thought. Jack asked, "So is the old man home yet?" "No. No, he isn't." Her voice quavered. "I'm worried that something's happened to Ben." She had been concerned her voice wouldn't sound convincing, but she realized now it didn't take any faking to sound upset. "You sound upset," Jack said. "What makes you think something happened?" Her eyes fell on the blue bundle. "Where did Raquel go?" she asked. She could envision him shrugging his meaty shoulders. "Girls' night, I guess. She didn't really say." "Do you think she could be with Ben?" "Be with Ben?" he echoed. She heard a beer cap rattle onto his counter. "What are you thinking, Victoria?" She remained silent. She wished the phone had a cord to twist. She put her foot on the top of the bundle and pushed, but it didn't budge. "Nah," Jack laughed. "Never. Everybody has the hots for Raquel, but her and Ben?" He glugged some beer. "What put that crazy idea in your head?" Had she tipped him to motive, or acted like a wife whose husband hadn't come home? She blurted, "She's always flirting with him." "Raquel flirts with everybody," Jack said, but his nonchalance was tinged with doubt. "I tell you, there's nothing to worry about. He was supposed to meet up with me tonight." "Wouldn't he have come home first? He didn't tell me anything." "Look," Jack said, "did he take some new tarps with him?" Victoria glanced at the blue bundle hanging halfway out the door. She propped herself up with the dining room table. "Yes. Yes, I believe he did." "Well, shit. You sound ready to cry. Ben is probably out in the park right now, waiting, wondering where the hell I am, wishing he didn't have his no cells in the wilderness policy." Victoria said, "You're probably right." Jack was too much of a sweetheart to let her go. "Look," he said, "this was supposed to be a secret. We were going to build a little shelter for deer hunting." "Why would you keep that secret?" Victoria asked. "Well, hell," Jack said. She could hear him weighing options, scratching his curly hair like he always did. "Shit." Victoria sighed deeply. It had been such an exhausting day. Ben stepping through the door, all smiles, saying he had to go out, but not explaining why. "Shit," Jack said. He laughed nervously. "I suppose Ben will get over it." Victoria held her breath and waited. "We knew you wouldn't approve," Jack spilled. "The deer hunting is illegal."
The only thing more frightening than what we know is what we think we know. Assumptions, as Samuel L. Jackson once said, make an ass out of you and umption, and this story is a near perfect example of that. However, what really works for me here is the way that it subverts the standard blue velvet-like idea that underneath the surface a small town is rife with as much vice and sex and horror as any big city. Which, to be fair, is largely true. Even my tiny little corner of the world managed to take in, if you take all the rumours at face value, sex, fraud, sex, alcoholism, sex, drug abuse, sex, extramarital affairs, and the odd hint of institutionalised corruption, all of which, I would like to point out, much like the summer of love for my dad some 40 years previously, always seemed to be happening just down the bloody road from me. The point remains valid, though, and it's all too easy a worldview to subscribe to. We are all of us trapped in our foxholes, all waiting for the next bombardment, the next mistake, the next moment a person in authority is revealed to be either incompetent or corrupt, or most frequently, and I still do not see how these two can go together so often, incompetently corrupt. So, every now and then, when a real, honest-to-God nice guy turns up, we naturally assume they want our livers. Or our faces. Now some do, not all, but some. But despite that, every now and then, try not to assume the worst. You might be pleasantly surprised. And after that weirdly life-affirming but hopefully pithy outro, on to the question. Which question, you ask, with a sneaking suspicion? I'm about to remind you we rely on you to pay our authors, so if you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. Oh. Yeah. Anyway. The question is, hey, Pseudopod guys, what's your Ace theme music? And the answer is Bloodletting in the Naked Kiss by Anders Manga. If you want to know more about them and their music, I'd recommend checking out andersmanga.com. you're in for a treat. Let's talk about the classics. I am, of course, speaking of Dan Dare, Pilot of the Future. The future that, when the series was produced, clearly involved the RAF settling space and heroic square-jawed pilots and their northern sidekicks saving the day. Dan, who is well worth a Wikipedia visit by the way, is undergoing something of a renaissance at the moment, and this collection of his first adventure is immense fun. This is a future where spaceships had huge fins, where pluck could save the world, a more innocent and at the same time, more heroic future than the one we ended up with. Dan Dare, Pilot of the Future. Not the future we got, but a future which is undeniably attractive for all its terrifying Treen invaders. So do yourself a favour, step back and forward in time with Voyage to Venus Volume 1 available now from Audible, and meet Dan. Trust me, he's worth the time. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod cannot be harmed by conventional weaponry. Seriously, we can't. Captain Kronos tried it once, did not end well.